And with familiar tones of AC/DC, you and I begin another episode of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, January 18th. We come to you coast to coast, from the North Pole to the South Pole, from the beaches to the sticks, every single day on WrestlingObserver.com. Of course, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Shout out to Bailey and producer Dom. All of our over-the-air affiliates, AM and FM. Kids, if you don't know what that means, ask your parents. iHeart, TuneIn, other apps. Everywhere you can get a signal in this fine world, you can hear my voice. And then, for that, I give thanks. Special shout out to those listening on the American Forces Network. We thank you for your service each and every day, especially thinking of you during these very uncertain times around the world. What is certain is that I'm going to be with you for the next hour with a lot to talk about, per usual, in the world of pro wrestling. And of course, we'll chat about what happened on last night's AEW Collision. It was a very busy night in pro wrestling last night. Not one, not two, but three shows that we were doing coverage for at WrestlingObserver.com. Again, AEW Collision, which was a tape show. We had a AAA show, I believe the first of their TV deal in Mexico, that is, for Fox Mexico, but carried on YouTube so everyone could see it. And we also had TNA Genesis. TNA, what a week for them. I'll talk a little bit, a tiny sconch, about the TV show, the debut on AMC last Thursday. It has been talked to death, but I think there's a few other little things to note. And then the important thing, where do they go from here? We'll chat about that. We'll look at the week ahead, some of the biggest news and happenings from the past week. Of course, again, TNA dominating the discourse, but there's certainly a lot of WWE to talk about. And WWE, of course, coming up on some big stuff themselves, a Royal Rumble. Can't wait, but we'll chat about all that and more over the next hour. Again, my name is Josh Nason, filling in for Andrew Zarian. It is Sunday, January 18th, and after the break, come back. More Wrestling Observer Live. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, January 18th, once again filling in for Andrew Zarian, who is on assignment somewhere. Probably not Gillette Stadium. I'd love to be at Gillette Stadium if I didn't have to drive there for the Patriots playing the Texans. Hopefully it's a great game for the Patriots. That's what I'm hoping for. Had some interesting games yesterday. If you're a Bills fan, boy, that's tough. That's a tough defeat. And in a franchise that has had a lot of them over the years, but certainly, we'll see what happens with them. Of course, we're here to talk about pro wrestling. It is Sports Byline, so I think I'm contractually obligated to at least mention the NFL and things like that. So yeah, where do I want to start? Want to start with AEW Collision? Why not, right? We'll talk about AEW, some WWE, and all the things that happened last night. Of course, Collision was a tape show. The big news, of course, out of the show, which we knew days before, since actually Wednesday evening, was that the Ops lost the AEW Trios titles to Hangman Page and, I almost say Skyflight, Jet Speed. I made that mistake writing up the report last night, writing the story for it. I'm like, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. But yeah, Jet Speed, your new Trios champions, defeating the Ops, of course, made up of Samoa Joe, Katsuyori Shibata, and Powerhouse Hobbs. Powerhouse Hobbs is heading out of town, and they didn't really make too much of it last night. He got beat by a roll-up last night to take the pin and lose the title, so that is his send-off. Of course, all expectations are that he is heading to the world of the World Wrestling Federation, WWE, of course. So we'll see. Yeah, we knew this going in. Didn't really know how it happened. You know, didn't delve too deep into the spoilers ahead of time to see what happened there. But yeah, I think, you know, Paige just kind of extends the rivalry with he and Samoa Joe, and he defeats him, so there's that. I don't know. Part of it going into that was, you know, are they going to keep those guys with the titles and have hook swap out or something like that? But no, they went the babyface route. I forgot. The Ops had a 273-day run, I think it was, and they won the titles. I was in attendance at AEW Spring Breakthrough, the Dynamite show in Boston last April, I believe. That was part of that. It was actually the main event close the show, the same show that had Kenny Ospreay, Will Ospreay, and Kinosuke Takeshita, and also had Athena and Mercedes Moné, a really load-up show in Boston. So we have a new Trios Champions, and yeah, it's the hops thing is, it's interesting because I think I was surprised just because he's there kind of been positioned as a top guy. I had no idea that AEW or WWE was that interested in him to begin with years ago. And apparently they have been, according to Dave Meltzer. And he was the one that first floated in the Wrestling Observer newsletter that WWE had a lot of interest in Powerhouse Hobbs. And I think people are like, huh, that's intriguing. And a few weeks later, wouldn't you know it, his contract's expiring. And so kind of some fortune telling there, so to speak. He also mentioned this past week's newsletter that Gabe Kidd is also of interest to WWE. So if that happens, then you kind of know that that something's up there. But yeah, it's fascinating. Hobbs, I think I don't think there's anyone AEW fans ever would complain about, and he hit the ceiling that I think Tony Khan was going to have. He's never really going to be pushed as a top guy. And really didn't get in the mix, you know, with a lot of those top guys as a single star. So I think he made the best out of his five-ish years, I believe. And he's moving on to a different place. And I've seen this narrative this last year a little bit that, and one that I agree with, in that I think that people should regularly move companies more often, move, change territories, and so on and so forth. They should move around. Keeps things fresh. And now, of course, there's fewer companies to do that. You know, WWE has the advantage of saying, well, let's go have you work in AAA for a while. Let's have you do some TNA stuff or whatever. So there are some positives there. And AEW really doesn't have that. I mean, they have some CMLL, the relationship there, New Japan, but they don't do a lot of like, you're just going to go work there for 2 months, right? They don't have that. Maybe they should. So I thought that was, you know, this kind of thing through this whole thing. Where is he going to appear? Is he going to be in NXT, main roster? We'll have to see. And who is he going to align with? How much are they going to play stuff up? They had, if you look at the roster changes this week, it was crazy. You had him departing. AEW signed four guys in the Rascals from TNA, whose their contracts or lack of contracts had expired, depending what member you are. So they added four people there. It was revealed that Máscara Dorada and Persephone are now officially on dual deals with AEW and CMLL. I think Waze smartly said that ways to keep them away from AAA, and that's a thing they have to think about as well, and CMLL leveraging their partner in AEW and saying, you know, I don't know if they did this, but can you help us out? We want to keep them and keep them for both of us. And I've talked about Máscara Dorada on this show before, and he stands out among a lot of these other luchadors that they have, and AEW is trying to create their own with, you know, poor Hologram, who keeps getting hurt all the time. So those are guys you expect to maybe see squeezed out a bit. It's the rosters are so big and bloated now. It's a really interesting bubble that you think is gonna, I hope it's gonna burst at some point. But there's only, if you don't have guys leaving, I mean leaving. These organizations like WWE and the part-time thing. And then when they come back and do stories, I think about Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns, I think, had seven matches last year, but he took up a lot of airtime during his segments. And when he would come out and do interviews and so on and so forth, that's time that is taken away from other people in development. And you say they're the big stars, but if they can come back and do these part-time deals where they wrestle 10 times a year, but they take up a lot of airtime, it's a trickle-down effect, and that's less time for other people, and you can't have five-hour shows on a weekly basis for a Raw or SmackDown or so on. So it's, if those guys aren't going to fully leave, how are more plants supposed to grow and sprout, right? And I think you get the same thing in AEW. They have 4 hours of TV a week, and there's only so much you can do, and they're under a lot of pressure and to perform and so on. It's but no one wants to let people go in fear of them becoming a bigger star somewhere else or so on. You know, and WWE is also doing these tryouts this past week, and they're saying now that our Brian Alvarez report that more and more indie guys that they're looking for and indie women, that's what they're kind of going back to. And they're trying to attract more indie talent. Where are they supposed to put them? right? Are they trying to, like, they already have Evolve. They already have the ID program. They already have NXT, and they have these NIL talents are bringing in. Like, where are they, where, what cupboards are bare in these organizations, especially in WWE, where they're going to be able to say, okay, look, we're going to put these people. AEW, where are they going to put the Rascals? You know, is it, at some point you're going to have too many people and you're going to have to make hard choices. We haven't had a big bloodletting in WWE in quite some time. We have not had one in, we never have had one really in AEW. They just let people's contracts expire, but you can see, you watch shows and be like, okay, you know, this person is used for a week and then they disappear. Or, you know, there's just a lot of intrigue when it comes to this. So let's go back. That's a real roundabout way of talking about AEW Collision. Because also Collision last night, they officially announced afterwards that Zeta Steele is now All Elite. So she is now under contract. She is part of Skyflight. So we'll see what happens with her. You know, a lot of Ring of Honor, a lot of, I don't know. And you have, of course, the national title going to be defended coming up, a rematch between Ricochet and Jack Perry. And we have a couple more matches announced for Dynamite. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. And just a Collision. And when we come back, I want to talk about TNA a little bit. And what can they do, or what do they think they should do, or do they think they have to do anything to rebound from their debut on AMC last week, which was roundly panned? And why? What happened? I think we all know, but we'll get into it after the break. Josh Nason, Wrestling Observer Live, coming right back after this. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. Sunday, January 18th. Let's talk about, let's actually round the bend with AEW and close that out. And then we'll talk a little about TNA, who's had quite an interesting couple days, to say the least. There was not a ton. Again, a couple matches made for next week's Collision. Nothing that earth-shattering. For Dynamite made this Wednesday, we finally will get what Dave Meltzer has been hoping for quite some time. The Death Riders against the Don Callis family. Faction on faction violence. These factions keep growing and growing and growing. John Moxley, Wheeler Yuta, and Danny Garcia taking on Rocky Romero, Hechicero, and Lance Archer in a street fight coming up on Wednesday. And the Lance Archer is one of those guys that, very similar to what I was talking about, like just all these talents that really don't do a lot, I was talking about in the first segment. This guy just will randomly appear for like a week, a couple weeks. He'll do a few Ring of Honor dates where he wrestles for, I guess you can call it wrestling, for like 40 seconds, will beat some people, has no direction, and they don't know. They don't, actually, maybe this, they do know what to do, and this is all they want to do. He's capable of more, but boy, I think his in-ring time, I think maybe in the last year, I would be shocked if it's more than 10 minutes. You know, it's crazy, but he's still around. Mina Shirakawa and Tony Storm taking on Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. Samoa Joe taking on Mike Bailey. That should be a lot of fun, as will be Swerve Strickland against Kevin Knight. That match made last night, so that should be quite entertaining as well, as will Kenny Omega against Josh Alexander. Kenny Omega's first singles match since July's All In. How about that? And it's Josh Alexander, first time ever match. Two Canadians going at it. And MJF making a appearance, of course, the AEW World Champion. He had a busy weekend. He appeared in Maine. Yes, my home state, the 207, for Limitless Wrestling. And he defended the AEW World title against Alec Price, a really, really good young wrestler. Someone I've interviewed on my Josh Nason's Punch-Out podcast before. And he's competed in GCW alongside Jordan Oliver, who is also in attendance as well. And MJF picked up the win. No spoilers there. I don't think anyone thought that, as good as Alec is, he was going to win the AEW World title in his first night. But it was fun. It had about 2,000 people, give or take, in Lewiston, Maine. Le Colisée, the same venue where the Phantom Punch, Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston, took place. If you're into boxing history, that famous picture you've probably seen before happened at that very venue all those years ago. And afterward, MJF telling Alec and Jordan, essentially, he talked to Tony Khan, and Tony said, scout him out, or something along those lines. Anyway, they're both under AEW contract at this point. So, good for them. Another two mouths to feed. You have a a lot of people. I assume they're not going to go straight to AEW. I don't know how they're going to be used. Again, you keep adding people, but if you're not really subtracting people, it's I think it really is now the I've heard this analogy made about grabbing toys out of the toy box, and this is the ones you want to use now, and you put the other ones back for a while. Seems to be what's going on. I don't know if the wrestlers like that. I assume to some extent, if they're making money, they do, but they like to work, and it's a story for another day, I guess, but one I definitely want to get into and allude to in the first segment. Let's get TNA. I talked about that in the first segment, that we'll dock some TNA. So I don't want to hammer to death how bad last Thursday's AMC debut was. I will echo the sentiments of many. It's just, it was disappointing and surprising because it was their first go-round on AMC. They had a long time to prep for this. They had a month off between essentially almost the entire month of November, I believe. And it was, and they didn't have the deal then, but I'm sure they kind of knew that was happening. But for whatever happened, this show was, I was shocked at how ineffective it was. The amount of ads, which I will say this, and it has still not been revealed how much money is being transacted for this deal. One person had put out, you know, it's a 3 for 10 or something like that, you know, $10 million a year for a $3 billion deal, or a three-year deal, rather. I don't know how accurate this is because no one else has been able to report that or confirm it. Mike Gilbert on my podcast, Josh Nason's Punch Out, mentioned he had heard, and he's pretty plugged into TNA stuff, having covered their promotion for his podcast for quite some time. He's on their understanding it's a rev share deal. So essentially there's no real skin off AMC's back and any money off ads or so on and so forth. If that is the case, one of the complaints was there were so many ads during the show. So you'd want to sell more ads in order to make more money. However, if that affects the quality of the show, you know, it's this kind of this balancing act, right? So that'd be just something to look at with this next episode coming up. I thought the quality of the broadcast, and I thought it was my TV or my feed, but it looked like lesser quality cameras than they had for their entire run before AMC, which I don't know how that's possible. There was, I guess, some sound issues. I didn't notice those as much. It just didn't appear big league. And I was surprised by that because they had so much time to prepare. And the main event of the night, the main event of the night led into the main event that was never announced for Genesis, which was a street fight between now new champion Mike Santana, who won the title Thursday and then defended against Frankie Kazarian in a rematch with Dick Nemeth as referee on Saturday for Genesis at the pay-per-view. They didn't announce that, really get to announce that on the show, or if they did, I think it was done in such a quick fashion, no one noticed it, for a Texas death match. And that happened, and there's been no buzz at this pay-per-view last night as a result. So the question before we get to Genesis is what can they do differently for this Thursday? Because it's going to be live. It's going to be from Albuquerque. I am a huge Breaking Bad fan. I'm a huge Better Call Saul fan. I'm cringing at what alignment product-wise they try to do this Thursday based on what happened this past Wednesday when they had these quote-unquote influencers and content creators and they were shooting people against this essentially a half house, a ton of empty seats. Surprised by that. It was, you know, they really had a nice uptick in 2025 and some nice crowds and so on. I think pro wrestling in general is burning out the Garland, Texas. Between AEW running there, I think WWE ran there recently or NXT did, and now with TNA running there, I think they've done burned out the territory. It's a lot of wrestling in a short amount of time. But now, so it would have been nice, I guess. It depends on, what am I trying to say here? Carlos Silva, I think it would have been nice if he acknowledged that the intro was not as well received as they thought. And you can do it in a way where you save face and AMC save face and so on. There was a report, I think, for PWM Insider, the AMC representatives that were there, very happy with how things turned out. I don't believe that story for one bit. Unless there was one where were they executives of any influence, they know what they were doing, right? I mean, I think it was hard to kind of come away from that being, oh, wow, this is the next big thing. So now it's a question of how do you get better for the Albuquerque show? How do you tighten things up? And I think if Carlos Silva if he's true to himself, it'd be great if he publicly acknowledged and said, we understand we may have let some fans down or what have you, and we're going to do our best we're going to put our best foot forward, and we're going to make our TNA fans proud, we're going to make AMC proud, and we're going to make all wrestling proud. Well, we're going to do something along those lines, and at least acknowledge and try to curb the tide, stem the tide from some of the negativity that's out there about the product again, which you were hoping to not do in this AMC thing. And that leads us to Genesis last night, a relatively buzzless show. And look, it doesn't give me any joy to say this stuff. And I've been a critic of TNA in the past, but look, you know, I think anyone that is a fan should be rooting for them. There's the WWE stuff, but aside from all that, I think there is, if they can develop a strong number three, that's good for everyone. I don't see evidence of that. JDC wrestled his final match in his career at Genesis, losing to Eddie Edwards. KJ Orso, the former Fuego del Sol, appeared on the pre-show and lost to Channing Stacks Lorenzo for the international title. Mustafa Ali essentially got his toenail ripped out, shared that. And that was it in terms of news. And we had this Texas death match where Mike Santana defeated Frankie Kazarian, Nick Nemeth as referee. They had no time to have any buzz or any real prep for a Texas death match. It just felt like an absolute throwaway because they weren't able to promote it on the Thursday show in any meaningful way. And then they had Friday, and they essentially had like 48 hours to try to do this, and there's too much stuff going on to pay attention to. And I feel bad for those guys. I feel bad for Santana. Then you look back, and was there a reason to strip him of the title for Frankie Kazarian to set up for this? No. Just create another great title match and have that be your AMC debut thing, right? AJ Styles appeared in this show. On the AMC premiere. I mean, it was fine. But did it mean anything? He looked at the title, and that was it. Is it foreshadowing? Is WWE going to want him back? Are they feeling good about this whole thing? Leon Slater wasn't there. I think that is, do you believe that he really had visa issues and all these people did? Some people might have. How's that possible? You had all this time to plan. I don't know. The industry needs a true, strong, independent number three. Is TNA ever going to be that? I don't know. I wish they were. We'll see what happens this Thursday. When we come back, we'll talk more about some WWE. Let's do that. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason. Come right back after this. Back with you in Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. Sunday, January 18th, filling in for Andrew Zarian once again. Of course, you can catch the show on demand. If you're listening on the radio, you can catch it on demand at WrestlingObserver.com. Also at our Spotify and Apple podcast feeds. Just search Wrestling Observer. And we just recently added, I thought this was pretty cool, video podcasts on Spotify. So we have our YouTube subscriptions. You can buy a subscription there, and you can get access to, you know, Wrestling Observer Radio, Wrestling Observer Live, Brian and Vinny, and so on and so forth. You can get those same shows if you have a Spotify subscription as well. So similar to like The Ringer, for example. I listen to a bunch of different stuff there, so you have the option to watch audio or video. And I'm going to sound like I'm 1,000 years old, but I don't know if you knew this. You can actually get you get the Spotify app on your TV, on your smart TV, so you can watch stuff there, listen to stuff there. So wherever you want to check out our content, you can find it at WrestlingObserver.com, anywhere in this fine world. And that fine world, of course, includes Mexico. And we'll go to Mexico next to recap what happened last night at the AAA, if I pronounce this correctly. So is a AAA on Fox debut. Of course, Fox in Mexico, not Fox around the world. Who knows if that will happen at some point. But this is their, they had a live TV special last night to kick things off. And of course, we had a few things going on here, which featured, of course, a brand new number one contender for Dominic Mysterio's AAA Mega title, that being former Mega champion El Hijo del Vikingo, flanked by Dorian Roldan and famed luchador Omos. Yes, Omos is going to be doing some stuff in AAA still. It is fascinating to me how Omos has re-signed a multi-year deal. He has appeared over last year in Japan and also in Mexico, but has not been on the main roster, NXT. It's this, talk about talent hoarding. I was talking about the first segment. They want to keep him so bad, they do not want him in their main roster, and I don't understand why. This is the thing. People do not want to let talents go, and the talent for their end of things don't want to leave. Clearly, he has no interest in going to AEW unless he absolutely has to, or even talking to AEW. That's a phraseology we should correct. Sometimes AEW is not interested, but wrestlers aren't willing to test the waters. You know, go with what's safe. At some point, it's just like, if you're not in the main roster, what are you doing? Anyway, but we had that happen last night. So I'm not sure when that match is going to happen. I assume one of their specials or so on, because Dom is still recovering from shoulder surgery or shoulder injury. I believe. I don't know if he actually got surgery on it, but yeah, shoulder injury last year. And so we'll see when that will actually happen. Of course, Dom, Vikingo, defeating El Grande Americano. And I'm looking forward to when Chad Gable returns, because I'm sure that'll be a nice feud. Grande versus the old Grande and Chad Gable. The Creeds will finally get a chance to get off main event, and they'll be up against Americano and his two lads. I'm blanking on their luchador names right now. Forgive me. So that'll be kind of fun. But we have Santos Escobar making his return last night. And, of course, he signed this big money deal. That's what we were told back last year. He became a free agent for about a day. And it's interesting how these things happen. And they really wanted him back that badly that they got him. And they certainly did. And apparently big money deal. But he has been El Desaperio or something like that off the face of the earth went after he signed this deal. But he finally returned last night. And he decided to confront El Hijo del Dr. Wagner Jr. And he appeared in the ring. Escobar did with his old Hijo del Fantasma Jr. mask, whispered something to the current AAA Latin American champion, laid him out, revealed himself. And he said he's been basically gone for 6 months. He's going to answer questions on his own time. So I like, you know, I need to admit, I'm not like the biggest AAA fan. I don't watch a lot of Mexican wrestling, CMLL or the like. But I do kind of like how they're using some of their Mexican talent in AAA, guys like Angel Humberto, again, Santos Escobar. Now we have the Mysterios doing stuff down there. We have Rey Fénix, Penta, and of course, Omos, another famed luchador. But I kind of like how they're really leaning into that. And I assume it's good for AAA. Is it good for hardcore fans of AAA? Are they enjoying this? I don't know. That's kind of what's happening. So Santos Escobar is now going to be in the mix there. So they're really kind of loading up. Of course, Dominic Mysterio, as I mentioned, is there quite a bit. And I think that was really about it from those tapings. Penta is going to be on the show to make a special announcement next Saturday, and also three title matches as well, as that goes to, I believe, a taped format, probably some occasional live shows and so on. But yeah, it's a big weekend in Mexico. A lot of CMLL shows down there and so on. And yeah, we'll see what happens next with them. Raw has some new matches for tomorrow's early show from Belfast, Northern Ireland. We have Javon Evans taking on El Grande Americano, the world traveler himself. We have Rey Mysterio, Penta, and Dragon Lee against Austin Theory, Bronson Reed, and Logan Paul. We saw that. It was been brewing here for a few weeks. Gunther will kick off the broadcast after defeating AJ Styles last week by cheating. And of course, CM Punk defending the world title against Finn Balor. First time ever match. I think that's pretty cool. And Maxine Dupri challenging Becky Lynch for the women's intercontinental title once again. So we'll see what happens. Of course, Bron Breakker is still storyline suspended, even though he apparently appeared on house shows recently. So who knows about that? We'll kind of round this segment out with some numbers, right? Not ratings. Don't turn the channel. I'm not talking about demos or anything like that. But there's been a lot of talk about how many matches people had per year and so on, and wins, losses. Here's just a couple things that I pulled from Cage Match, which I think these things are fascinating. I guess I'd mentioned this. I was talking to Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics a few weeks ago, who covers all about the business of pro wrestling. And I was curious, who are kind of the workhorses per year, and are they some of the big stars and so on and so forth in both WWE and AEW? And it's kind of interesting. So the most matches from someone in AEW this year was not a CMLL New Japan co-signed guy. It would be John Moxley at 53. Kenosuke Takeshita, yes, he does work for does some work for New Japan, but the bulk of his work in AEW, 49 matches. Roderick Strong, 48. I was surprised about that. That one stood out. Bandido, 47. Danny Garcia, 46 matches. Kyle Fletcher, 46. Claudio Castagnoli, 45. Mark Briscoe, 44. Speedball Mike Bailey, 33. And Kevin Knight, 43. That's what I have at this point. But that's kind of your top 10. Actually, Bailey may be 43 as well. It may be a typo. Regardless, your Moxley, top star. Takeshita, getting there. Has certainly the capabilities, but hasn't been pushed as far as like the top level. Kyle Fletcher, we've seen his ascent. But this is a lot of kind of middle guys. Roddy Strong, Claudio, Briscoe, Jet Speed, and so on. And again, you do not see, some of their upper echelon talent. So Hangman Page, 31 matches last year. Swerve Strickland, 24. Granted, he was hurt. Will Ospreay wrestled half the year, 26 matches. Kenny Omega, 16. And MJF, just 11. And I included this one, too. I was curious. Hook, a young developing wrestler, had just 20 matches this past year compared to 29 the year before. That is, he was out for a little bit with a concussion, but you hope he gets more and more in-ring work this year. For the women, Megan Bain, 41 matches, Toni Storm, 39, Julie Hart, 35, Mercedes Moné, 34, Harley and Willow Nightingale both had 33. So you kind of see that's that sweet spot there for them is right in the upper 30s, and for the men, it seems to be, the mid 40s or so on, unless you're kind of the upper stars, and it's considerably less than that. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Again, some of those matches may have been other organizations. I'd have to really dive in. It kind of gives you a general sense of what's up. We have, compared to last year, Orange Cassidy at 68 matches. Of course, he was hurt this past year, but that gives you an idea. Claudio Castagnoli, again, 51. Kyle O'Reilly, 57. Dante Martin, 46. And Riley Strong, 43. So 2024, they really leaned into the conglomeration, right? And one of the Death Riders. And Mariah May at 37. Will Knight, I think that might include her NXT stuff, so we'll put an asterisk in that. Will Nightingale, 32. Chris Statlander, 31. Toni Storm, 27, and Anna Jay, 25. Ospreay, 37 that last year. Swerve Strickland, 33. MJF, 8. Hangman, 24. And I don't believe Kenny Omega wrestled the entire year due to injuries and all that. So Hangman does still 2 years in a row doesn't have a ton of matches. If you go to WWE, you look at LA Knight, 67 matches. Roxanne Perez, 66. Penta, 63. Javon Evans, who that's a lot of NXT, 59. Jey Uso, 58. NXT talent down the road. Stephanie Vaccaro at 54 matches. Raquel Rodriguez at 50. Who else? Oh, a lot of NXT. Dom had 47. Ivar had 47. Lyra Valkyrie had 48. So your upper echelon, not in the top at all when it comes to top matches, rather. Cody Rhodes, 36 matches. And it was a huge drop. He had over 100 the year before because there was the house shows, right? That's a huge drop. Punk had 38 matches. John Cena, 18. Reigns and Brock, I think Roman Reigns may have had seven. They didn't have enough where it registered for this past year. I think my filter may have been three, so perhaps it was less than that. Brock, of course, just having the two matches. Seth Rollins, 20. Of course, he got hurt. Drew McIntyre, only 28 matches. I was surprised about that. AJ Styles, 31. And Gunther, 31 matches, which I thought was low as well. Rhea Ripley, 35. Charlotte Flair, 34. Io Sky, 37. Julia, 36. Nia Jax at 35. So I thought that was fascinating. This is all to say how much wrestling has changed so much, again, in the non-house show era, where your biggest stars, you know, in WWE, Cody, CM Punk, Rhea Ripley, Io Sky, and so on, AJ Styles, Gunther, all in that 30-ish, 35 range. So not a lot, not compared to what we used to be a lot, it's not at all. And it's great work if you can get it, right? But of course, this does not cover any of their appearances that did do. And that'd be maybe a fun thing for a cage match down the road to add, just if you just actually appear on a show and so on. But even on the AEW side, you know, there's Moxley and so on, but your upper tier are not wrestling 40 some odd times a year. It's your workhorses are your conglomerations, your Death Riders, and so on. You know, Takeshi doing a lot of work, but I expect that to drop a little bit. Fletcher as well. They're trying to save these guys, I guess, or I don't know. The Page one I was surprised about. And granted, the other, you know, your top guys have injuries, but you expect both companies are so different, but so similar in that the amount of how often their top stars actually work. Couple more things. TNA, Leon Slater led the pack with 35, followed by Matt Hardy with 35, Moose at 35, Brian Myers 32, and Mike Santana and Zachary Wentz now of AEW 32 each. And Ring of Honor, Blake Christian, Lee Johnson, those two guys, a swirl, 25, 23 respectively. Tony Nese, Ari Davari, and Lee Moriarty at 21. And with that, I am out of time. Wrestling Observer Live, final segment. Come right back after this. Final segment, Wrestling Observer Live. I hope you stuck with me after all those numbers. Good stuff. We'll do a preview of the week ahead here. Mystico, by the way, 246 matches last year. Masca Dorada, 216. The league leader, Axel Carter, 365 matches. How about that? And Hiroshi Tanahashi had 148 matches in his final year as an active wrestler. Take that, John Cena. Let's go to the calendar and look what's coming up on the week ahead and yet another busy week in the world of professional wrestling. On Monday, of course, we have Monday Night Raw starting out at 3:00 Eastern, again from Belfast, Northern Ireland. We have NXT coming up on Tuesday at 8 p.m. as always. AEW Dynamite, 8 p.m. as always. We have Ring of Honor coming up this week at 7. We have TNA Impact again, the follow-up, a live show. We talked about that earlier in the show if you missed it. What do they need to do? They need to come out and have a hot show this Thursday, coming off of Genesis and what we saw this past Thursday. Reset the narrative. That is going to be huge for them coming up this Thursday. So something to watch for on AMC. We have SmackDown this Friday, per usual, 3 hours long. And then next Saturday, we have a double dose, AEW Collision at 8. And then we also have WWE Saturday Night's main event. Yes, the Royal Rumble is looming in the distance, and Saturday Night's main event, I'm sure, I'll set some more things in motion with that. Cody Rhodes is already committed for the Rumble, so we'll have more and more talent there. Heading to Saudi Arabia coming up. That'll be the weekend after. And then nothing of that much note coming up on Sunday. So we have a pretty clear week. Again, double duty coming up on Saturday. But, yeah, another busy week in pro wrestling. I chose AAA as well. And you have a lot of busy weeks, I'm sure. And I greatly appreciate the time you spent with me on this episode of Wrestling Observer Live. Hopefully it made your Sunday a little bit better. I know it did for me. My name is Josh Nason. Andrew Zarian will return next week in this very spot. You can check me out on Twitter or Blue Sky, JOSHNASON. This has been Wrestling Observer Live for Sunday afternoon. Thanks a lot. Josh Nason, Wrestling Observer Live.